In early July, CKLN got a call from Sean Lee Popham, a friend and an activist with the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty. Sean was arrested at an OCAP protest in Whitby on June the 12th. He was initially denied bail and ended up incarcerated at the Whitby jail for over a month. Sean was a little bored. He wanted a project to focus on. We suggested that he help produce a documentary about the Whitby jail for our special Prison Justice Day programming. He began to gather other prisoners who were interested in contributing, and in the end, we were joined by three prisoners, Farrow, Spencer, and Justin. Like Sean, all three are being held in pretrial custody. Not convicted of anything, they're spending months in detention, waiting for their day in court. In fact, they said that most prisoners in Whitby were in the same situation. Those who actually are serving sentences at Whitby have been sentenced to less than 2 years in prison. Anyone sentenced to a longer term goes to a federal institution where conditions are much different. Listening to these guys opens a window onto the frustration of being on the wrong side of the law, especially when you're poor, disabled, or without landed immigrant status.
Yeah, the bail system's so ridiculous. It's like seeing people leave in the morning at like 7:30, just being so optimistic and being like, okay, bye guys. It's been good, I'm getting out today. I got it all lined up, my lawyer's there, my wife, my dad's coming, it's gonna be okay. And then like coming back at 6 o'clock and just being like, ugh, I didn't get it again. And like seeing people go day after day after day. It's such a hard time that way. Like sitting here is one thing, but going back and forth to the court every day and getting jerked around and just having no control and just purely not being able to get bailed because you don't have the connections, like you can't afford an expensive lawyer, or you don't have, your family can't take the time off work or whatever it is.
Oh, I had a lawyer, I had a charity for $55,000, and they denied my bail, and it was on my engagement party too, and my lawyer told the judge that it's his first time doing this, like, he let him out, and my lawyer told the judge that my mom's not, like, to give me curfews and stuff, and they said no, they just DO'd me, and then I just came here, and that's about it.
I went for bail, and my bail was denied. I'm physically disabled, and I collect $930 a month for this. I'm physically disabled, and I'm in here personally for allegations that I assaulted a person who just got out of jail and has probation conditions that he not associate with me, and that he should stay away from me and my girlfriend. I have one charge, or one conviction, on my criminal record, and that is fail to comply. I don't understand why my bail was denied, because I'm homeless and on disability. Well, that's basically it, I guess. They want to give me a home. I don't want this to be my home. I want to go back on the outside world and get my life straightened out. That's about it.
You know, denied bail. But denied bail 6 times. The first time, you know what I mean? I've been for 12 months now. You know, I don't go to court for another 4 months. You know, this is crazy. Once you're in here, you're stuck, basically stuck. Is, you know?
Yeah. I went to court, and the duty counsel told me that there's a chance that they're gonna deport me, and I said why? She's like, because you're not landed immigrant, and we're waiting for a landed status, and she said, yeah, there's a chance. So I was just, you know, it's not right, because that shouldn't, because I'm not convicted yet for anything, and it might drop or not, so why, what does it have to do with deportation and stuff like that?
Are you in touch with anybody who can help you with your immigration case?
No, not yet, no.
Right.
No, when I met Sean and John, they told me about it. So I said, okay, I'm gonna call you guys when I get out or something. But I would like to get in touch with someone to help my whole family, because we've been living in Canada for 5 years. We're still not landed. We're refugees. And we keep on applying for it, and nothing works out yet. We're waiting. It's a long time. I can't have a health card even. I can't go to the dentist, to the doctors, anywhere. Without my health card, we don't have a health card, because my sister finished her college, her school, and she can't go to college or university without her landed papers, because she can't get a career without her landed papers. So my little sister can't get her social insurance card starting from 4. She gets it from 911, and nobody gonna accept that. So, like, not a lot of people accept it when it's 911. That's like refugee, so they don't give you jobs and stuff. A lot of stuff like that happens all the time.
You would not have this many people complaining about the conditions in here if legal aid was provided for bail hearings. About 3 years ago, I believe, legal aid stopped covering bail hearings. So now, if you don't have $500 or $1,000, you have to turn to a duty counsel lawyer to represent you. And I swear, those duty counsel lawyers have lunch with the Crown Attorney every fucking day, and you don't get bail. They screw you over. You don't get bail. You get thrown in jail, where I am right now. And when you go to your court date, they say, if you plead guilty, you walk right now. And they make you amazing deals. They'll drop half your charges and say, you can walk out the door right now, just admit your guilt. But if you stand and you say, I am not guilty, you can see a trial date 6 months down the road. And if you aren't guilty, you just spent 6 months in jail for nothing, costing the taxpayers money, running the hydro, the water, the food, what have you, all because you stood up and tried to maintain your innocence. That's where the problem starts. It starts at bail court, and it's the legal aid issue.
Cold and dirty. That's how everyone described Whitby. Farrow goes into some more detail about the lack of religious facilities for Muslim inmates. Justin's concerned about medical care, and Sean describes the use of psychiatric drugs.
I guess they can't punish you more. They can't, like, hit you and stuff. So what they do is they keep this place very cold, and they give you 10 blankets, and when you ask them for more, they don't give you. And stuff like, they feed you 3:30, they give you dinner. So the rest of the night, you're all hungry, you know? That's how it is here.
See, federal system is way different than provincial system. It's basically, inmates run the federal system, and jail guards here run this system. You know what I mean? Like the provincial system. So as you go to the pen, you have your own, you know, everybody's living there, they got life, some people are doing life, some people are, you know, they're living there, that's their turf. You know, coppers don't come on a range. Here, coppers are on a range, they run this place, and it's just, you know, they don't care about the hygiene of this place, you know. It's no running water, there's bacteria on all the walls, you know what I mean? Moving us to overcrowded ranges, because they run the jail, you know. You try to do your cleaning, you can't clean, they send weekenders here, and you don't get weekenders in the pen, you get people that live there. I'm just saying about the bacteria and stuff, and these guys are bringing here are kids, you know? Cells all dirty, doing their things. Dirty stuff, you know? And federal system, you got people that live there, stay there, house clean. Here, it's more like, you know, nobody really cares. And keep treating the cells messy, the guards don't take care of us. But not enough cleaning supplies, you know? Wrecks this jail, makes it look like, you know, a dirt pile. And the attitudes you get from the coppers is not too pleasant. Federal system, they leave you alone. Provincial, they'll yak at you, put you in the hole for anything.
as Muslims, we can't eat pork. We need a place to pray because we, like, there's no such a thing as a strict or not strict. Muslims are Muslims, and they're supposed to pray 5 times a day. If not, they have to pray once or twice a day. And they need a specific place, and they need clean food. Like, certain things can't be eaten. Like, we can't eat pork. And when I came in here, I told them I can't eat pork, and they said okay, they just said okay. So I went to the nurse, I requested for a nurse, so, because a lot of people told me to request for, to talk to the nurse. I talked to the nurse, and she said okay, any special diet. I said I don't want nothing to do with no pork. She's like okay, but still the next day they sent me hot dog, which was pork, so I couldn't eat it. I just didn't touch my food. Today they served pork again, and they don't listen to what like some people do, and there's no special Muslim programs here and stuff like that. Yep, there's about 2 or 3 Muslims with me, and there's some in other ranges, but not a lot in here. But in other jails, there's Muslims there, and I think they get supported with whatever they say. I think, I'm not sure. I'm not guaranteed. They have all kinds of church here. There's programs you can join and go take, and you go in that program twice a week, and they pray, and they get books from their Bibles, but they don't have no such thing for Muslims here. Even though there's Muslims that come here, and there's no such thing for them. There's supposed to be special programs, special praying times, and stuff like that. If not that, there's supposed to be a Holy Quran here for us to read, you know, follow our rules, but they don't worry about nothing. They just worry about putting you in jail, and it's nothing. They don't worry about nothing, how we can't eat pork and stuff like that. So stuff like that always happens here. They should take people more serious. They think we're criminals, but we're not convicted yet for anything. They treat you like dogs and stuff, and they shouldn't do that. I don't have much experience, but they shouldn't. They should listen to what you have to say and what you're asking for and stuff, but they mind their own business. That's about it. I don't have nothing else to say.
The medical here is a joke. Like, they don't even check you for anything when you come in here except for one tuberculosis test, and that's it. So this place could be overrun with STDs, crabs, lice, whatever. Don't trust anything here. No checks for nothing except tuberculosis. Their medical files are destroyed because I've been here 2 or 3 times and they have absolutely no medical record on me whatsoever. They don't even know if I've been here already or not. So every time I come here, they start a new file. So I'm just sick of going over the same shit again and again. So I just, to hell with it. I remember when I was here 3 years ago on charges that were dropped, or it was bullshit anyway. Someone came in and made the staff aware they had HIV. And that person slept in the visiting room for his stay of 2 weeks or so, I think it was. If someone tested positive for tuberculosis, I don't know, they might be put in solitary confinement, which is the infirmary, is what I know it to be. That's where I believe they hold inmates if they're on suicide watch or if they say they have medical problems resulting from what, I don't know. But the infirmary is basically like solitary confinement. You're locked in a room with absolutely nothing, maybe a mattress.
And also the amount of people who've been coming in who are like, oh, I wanted to be in a psych ward. I've asked to be put in the psych ward outside and there wasn't room for me. And then a day or two later, the cops picked me up and brought me here. There's been like probably 3 or 4 guys like that in the last 2 weeks. Oh, there's no room from the hospitals. always room in the jail for me. There's probably always one or two of 20 guys in the range who will talk to themselves or mostly who will talk to themselves is the sort of overarching commonality with them. And there's just nowhere else to put them in the jail. And everyone, so it's a combination of that and if you go see the psych doctor in the jail, their only question is so what kind of meds do you want? And I've talked to guys who are I've got anger management. I went to see him and I was this is the first time I've been able to come out publicly and be I want help with this. And all the doctors say is okay, what kind of pills do you think you need? And they're just and the population's so heavily medicated. Most of the guys who are actually spending time, so the guys who've been here for a week or so, I'd say at least three quarters of them are on some sort of meds. And lots of those are sleeping pills. For the younger guys, they can rattle off, as if they were pharmaceutical scientists, rattle off the different drugs they're on and their different conditions as far as I have ADHD, I have bipolar, I have claustrophobia, I have multiple personality disorder, I'm on Prozac, Ritalin, on and on and on. I'm just oh my god, you're 19. And all the drugs are so they can have a more heavily sedated population.
They ask you if you're on any medication. A lot of inmates here, I don't know what kind of medication they're taking, but it's handed out like candy, and that I believe is a serious health risk.
Even as some mind-altering drugs are easily available, smoking has been banned in provincial jails for some time. Spencer and Justin describe the impacts on the prison population.
You get a bale of tobacco on the road for, say, $8, give or take a few change. And you can sell it in here for about $250 to $300 black market, a bale of tobacco. So it opens up the black market right there. People that get a sentence, they'll pack up because, pack up, what I mean by pack up is bring the tobacco, and they know they can sell it for three times as much. So why bring drugs in when you can just bring three bales of tobacco, and make $800 and rather bring in, drugs in and make it $400 or $500 when you can make $600 on just tobacco? And if you get caught with it, it's not a charge, because it's legal. So that opened up the black market like you wouldn't believe, Why take away something that's legal on the road, and open up the black market for it? It's just a big game of cat and mouse. Who's going to catch who and who's going to find out? And, that's the way the mentality is in here. But the thing is, people are fighting over cigarettes. They should have, their own stuff. You should have smoking outside or something, Just don't take their personal privileges away. You see if you get people getting punched out over, bringing cigarettes back and not giving out, to the whole range. And then getting punched out, people paying $280, $300 a bale of tobacco, and then paying an extra $100 for a lighter or something, it's a lot of money, $100 for a Bic lighter. That's what I don't understand. Why don't we just legalize it, put everything back, people are calmer, they do their own thing. You don't smoke, don't smoke. This is jail, not in here for being nice.
Some cigarette packets state the obvious. Quitting cigarettes is harder than quitting crack cocaine and heroin. That information was compliments of Health Canada and Statistics Canada. Whitby Jail is full of addicts who will say or do anything to get out and light up. Anything. We have had three serious riots here at Whitby Jail since smoking was prohibited in 1999. The purpose of all three riots was to have that prohibition overturned. Guards were held hostage in the hostage and the town was under siege. The emergency task force was helpless. On all three occasions, the ETF met our demands and brought in cartons of smokes to calm our addiction. We then agreed to hand over control of the jail back to the guards. How many times will Mike Harris allow us addicts to jeopardize the safety of staff, citizens, and each other, all for a cigarette that Paul Bernardo enjoys?
People upstairs, you know, they just went loony because, you know, you're doing time, you're looking at a lot of problems. Some people, cigarettes bad, but, you know, calms people down, you know. People do the wrong thing. They don't get their cigarettes, they're coming down, you know, cause problems, and they said they had enough of it, you know. They should be able to smoke. They're not sentenced yet. You know, if we're sentenced, we have our rights taken away from us. So, you know, if you want to cut out smoking, cut out smoking. But, you know, we're not sentenced yet. So, you know, like, why do they have the right to take us away from our smoking if we're not sentenced, you know, like, you know, it's not against a lot of smoke, you know, out on road, but, you know what I mean?
On June 12th, the same day as the OCAP action when Sean was arrested, prisoners on one upper range of the Whitby jail had rioted. Spencer describes what he knew about how it happened and what the consequences were.
If you're a good guy, they keep you down on little ranges, badasses go upstairs, you know? You know, people are always fighting against coppers, and they put about, you know, 16 guys in a five-cell range. You know what I mean? Two bunks there, one's got to sleep on the floor. So, you know, it's not too healthy, but they were fighting, but no one else followed them. See, this is the provincial system. Do you know what I mean? So they just caused a big riot. Well, they tried to, you know, smashing TVs or whatever, but I didn't think that would make sense, you know, smashing government property. But I'm just saying, if you're going to protest, there's nothing you can do about it in here, you know? But they did it anyway, try to do the old thing, but they all got shipped and they got about, you know, 52 charges each. But that was quite an incident. Just finished cleaning it up right about now.
Spencer does have an appreciation for resistance inside the walls. He knew about Prison Justice Day and he talked about what it meant to him.
Prison Justice Day started, you know, inmates weren't getting canteen or stuck here for long periods of time. So some of the penitentiaries, they rioted, right? To get the canteen privileges, you know, things they wanted to have while they're living there. And the people getting killed, guards and inmates now, so they have a certain day, Prisoner's Justice Day there, that nobody eats. But very few people do that in provincial systems, it's, you know, it's mostly federal. So that's the whole Prisoner's Justice thing. You're not supposed to eat for the full day, allowed to drink, you know. It's just to support what happened, you know, for our rights inside the jail here, because we really basically got none, you know. So I support it myself, you know what I mean? Like, I don't eat. But any other day, I eat like a madman, you know. I'm always full. But that day, I don't like, you know, I say, you're not eating today. I get a couple people going. But a lot of guys, they don't understand, you know, what really went down on that day, you know, for them not to eat. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I support it big time, you know. I'll have just my fluids and a couple other guys that have been down in the pen down below for, you know, 5-6 years, doing a little brief bit here and there, you know, they'll follow me, because they know what it was, you know, they know what it was, who got killed, how many prisoners, and for what reason, because we get to order canteen today, that's the whole reason, that they, you know, that's why I'm not eating. If these guys wouldn't have did that, I wouldn't have been able to order, you know, like, paper, pencils, crib games, stuff like that, you know what I mean, so that's why I support it, you know, they did us a favor by letting us order canteen. You know, because they were going to stop that back then, right? So I support it. I support it like probably more than other people here, you know, because they just don't know. You know, so.
Thanks to Sean, Farrow, Justin, and Spencer for contributing to this report.